2 Kings chapter 23, we're studying about the reign of King Josiah over Judah. And last week in this particular chapter, we were looking at in some detail or through the details that are given in this chapter. And this is the only, as we have parallel passages in 2 Chronicles, particularly chapters 34 and 35 about the reign of Josiah, to go along with 2 Kings 22 and 23. So those are our four major chapters that cover what happened in the days of Josiah, about him and the events in Judah during his time. This is the chapter that gives the details that coincide with the prophecy in 1 Kings chapter 13, where Josiah was called by name, that, and that God foretold that he would be the one to render his judgment on those on the altar and the bones of the priests, those wicked priests that Jeroboam had made, all of those sins that Jeroboam the son of Nebat had committed, and so they were, Josiah would be the one 300 years in advance, we were told, or the he was told and the people were told that Josiah would do those things, burn the bones of those priests on that altar. And so 2 Kings chapter 23 gives the details in how that was fulfilled, and states that that was in fulfillment of that prophecy. The last part of that, as we as we read down through verse 20, the latter part, the very end part of that, when he found the tombs of those priests, those idolatrous priests there in Bethel, he had their bones burnt there on that altar, and polluted it. And it said in verse 16, according to the word of the Lord, which the man of God proclaimed, who proclaimed these words. Then there, in the next verse, verse 17, he asked of the title, a title that he saw on a tomb, and it was the tomb of that prophet. And that was the younger prophet that we read about in 1 Kings chapter 13. Going back there, what he made that prophecy against the altar there, that younger prophet in 1 Kings 13, and Jeroboam heard those words, and then the sign was done where the altar was rent in two and poured, and the ashes poured out. That was God's testimony that that prophet was foretelling, speaking his words, and that all that he said would come to pass. Well, what happened right after that? What did Jeroboam, what did he do? Well, of course, he put his hands on him, and there was another miracle that was that occurred, because he became leprous and then was healed. But then what happened after that? Jeroboam requested or invited that prophet to do what? Yes, he invited him to come to the palace, but he did not, because God had instructed him to immediately go back, he was not to take any stops or detours on the way. So God had given him, the prophet himself, some very explicit instructions about what he was to do on that day, and after making that prophecy. And so he refused the king's invitation because of what God had said. So in 1 Kings 13, verse 7, Jeroboam had said to the man of God, come home with me and refresh thyself, and I will give thee a reward. In verse 8, the man of God said unto the king, if thou wilt give me half thine house, I will not go in with thee, neither will I eat bread, nor drink water in this place, for so it was charged me by the word of the Lord, saying, eat no bread, nor drink water, nor turn again by the same way that thou camest. So he went another way and returned not by the way that he came to Bethel. And then we read about the old prophet in verse 11 that was in Bethel, who informed his sons, informed him of what had happened that day, and he sent them to bring the man, that the younger prophet, to his house, which he refused for the same reason. But then the older prophet told him in verse 18, I am a prophet also as you are, and an angel spake unto me by the word of the Lord, saying, bring him back with thee unto thine house, that he may eat bread and drink water. But he lied unto him. And so he did. He went home with him. And because of that, as he sat at the table, God's word came to that prophet who brought him there, the older prophet. And in verse 21, he cried to the man of God that came from Judah, saying, thus saith the Lord, forasmuch as thou hast disobeyed the mouth of the Lord and has not kept the commandment which the Lord thy God commanded thee, but camest back and has eaten bread and drank water in the place of the which the Lord did say to thee, eat no bread and drink no water, because thou shalt thy carcass shall not come unto the sepulchre of thy fathers. So then he left to go home, and what happened on the road? He got killed by a lion. Eaten or just killed? A little unusual. He got torn, but he was not devoured. And so what did the, when the old prophet found out about that, what did he do? Well, he had, it says in verse 29, the prophet took up the carcass of the man of God and laid it upon the ass and brought it back. And the old prophet came to the city to mourn and to bury him. And he laid his carcass in his own grave. And they mourned over him, saying, alas, my brother. And it came to pass after he buried him that he spake to his son, saying, when I am dead, then bury me in the sepulchre wherein the man of God is buried. Lay my bones beside his bones. And that's what happened, it tells us. So that both prophets are in the bones of both of those prophets are in this tomb. But it's marked because 300 years later, and if any of you know anything about me, I mean, when I see a cemetery that's got tombs that old, that's interesting to me. When you see a grave that goes way back like that, it's and I know anybody from Europe thinks 300 years is not anything impressive at all. But in any event, you see a marker on there, somebody that from 300 years ago on a gravestone. I mean, that gets the attention of some people. But anyway, Josiah saw this marker there and wanted to know what that said. What was the title there? So this is back in 2 Kings 23:17. And the men of the city told him, it is the sepulcher of the man of God which came from Judah and proclaimed these things that thou hast done against the altar of Bethel. And he said, let him alone, let no man move his bones. So they let his bones alone with the bones of the prophet that came out of Samaria. What he found in as far as the graves of all of those priests, their bones were burnt on the altar. But the bones of that prophet who had foretold what Josiah would do, that grave was left in peace by Josiah. So, of course, who's directing all of this? I mean, God was not going to have the bones of those prophets involved in that situation to be burnt with the bones of the those priests that were made of the lowest of the people by Jeroboam. So that this all goes back to those events of 1 Kings 13. So 2 Kings 23 ties all of this together. And so based on what we read before and in that account in 1 Kings 13, we can see how 300 years later all of this was brought to pass. But of course, in those verses that we read last week, that came before Josiah's work took him to Bethel in verse 15 here, there was a lot that was going on there in from verses 4 through 14. Bethel, as we know, going back to what we're seeing there in 1 Kings 13, who's, which kingdom did that pertain to after the division of the kingdom? The northern or the southern? Well, the northern kingdom, obviously, because it was Jeroboam, the king of that kingdom, the new king of that new kingdom, that made Bethel one of the places where he put one of those golden calves and made the altar there, and to prevent them from going into the territory of the southern kingdom, that namely the capital city, Jerusalem, where Rehoboam was as king of the southern kingdom. So that was the whole reason that was there. So this was part of the territory of the former northern kingdom of Israel, that no longer exists in Josiah's time, as it came to an end and during Hezekiah's reign. Josiah is doing this cleanup work of all the vestiges of this evil and the wickedness and idolatry that was not just in Jerusalem and not just in Judah. And we saw Hezekiah similarly take actions, but we're seeing Josiah taking it much further, and making sure that everywhere throughout the land that nothing is missed. So what we saw in verses 4 through 14 was Josiah's work in his own land, but we can see that it carried to the entire territory that God had given to the children of Israel, all that land of Canaan. So Josiah was not particular about, well, this is the area of my tribe of Judah. He was looking at all Israel, as that was what God had given to the nation, and all the wickedness that had been done in the territory of his nation, he was destroying all the remnants of that. He also defiled, as we saw in verse 10, he defiled Tophet, which is in the valley of the children of Hinnom, that no man might make his son or his daughter to pass through the fire to Molech. So that was the chief of the sins, the reason the Lord in Manasseh's time, Josiah's grandfather, why the Lord said that he was not going to pardon what was done there, was the shedding of that innocent blood, which had filled, that they had filled Jerusalem with, this practice of the sacrificing of their children to Molech. And that was the place they did that, where that was done, was there in Tophet in the valley of the children of Hinnom. So that was defiled by Josiah. As we know from what happened later, Josiah was executing God's judgment on this. Then that became a place for the years to come where they burnt refuse. And so there were continuous fires. There were perpetual fires in the valley of Hinnom, which is why Gehenna happens to be the word. That's the Greek word taken directly from the Hebrew Valley of Hinnom. That's the word for hell. So there's a basis for that. We can look at the kinds of deeds that were done there, and then the fact that the Lord made that a place of perpetual burning of the refuse. So an appropriate symbol it is for that place to come in eternity, where Satan and his angels will be and all the wicked. But Josiah executed this judgment on all of this throughout the land. And so that brings us to the end of our reading from last week through verse 20. In verse 21, the next thing that was done was the king commanded the Passover to be kept. Verses 21 through 23, it says, "And the king commanded all the people, saying, keep the Passover unto the Lord your God, as it is written in the book of this covenant. Surely there was not holden such a Passover from the days of the judges that judged Israel, nor in all the days of the kings of Israel, nor of the kings of Judah. But in the 18th year of King Josiah, wherein this Passover was holden to the Lord in Jerusalem. Moreover, the workers with familiar spirits, and the wizards, and the images, and the idols, and all the abominations that were spied in the land of Judah and in Jerusalem did Josiah put away, that he might perform the words of the law which were written in the book that Hilkiah the priest found in the house of the Lord. And like unto him was there no king before him that turned to the Lord with all his heart and with all his soul and with all his might, according to all the law of Moses, neither after him arose there any like him." Then it tells us in verse 26, "Notwithstanding the Lord turned not from the fierceness of his great wrath, wherewith his anger was kindled against Judah because of all the provocations that Manasseh had provoked him withal. And the Lord said, I will remove Judah out of my sight, as I have removed Israel, and will cast off this city Jerusalem, which I have chosen, and the house of which I said, my name shall be there." Now the rest of the acts of Josiah and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Judah? And then after that, we read about Josiah's death, which we'll pause there. So all that Josiah did to fulfill God's word. We saw that when he was 16 years old is when he turned his heart to seek the God of his fathers. And as he sought, he found. And from that time, he started taking steps, removing the places of the idol worship where that was done. He knew that was not in accordance with God's will. But as far as the details of God's law, that was something that he was largely ignorant of because of the fact that it had been lost to the people in the preceding years, going back to all that was done between Hezekiah's time and Josiah's. But when Josiah had commissioned the cleansing of the temple and of the repair of it, and they found in the book of the law of the Lord, Hilkiah the priest, and it was brought to Josiah, and he heard those words and tore his clothes. What did he do? Well, he did everything to comply with and fulfill and keep all of those words that he had heard. Now, notwithstanding, it says, God would not turn from the fierceness of his great wrath from all of those sins that had been committed. But what did he say about the timing of the judgment of that? If God didn't turn from his fierce wrath, why didn't he pour it out right then and there? Because of Josiah and when he humbled himself before the Lord. So the Lord had said that because Josiah humbled himself when he heard those words, God deferred the timing of that judgment until after his day. So it's coming, and it's coming very soon. It's going to be in the next generation. There'll still be a few kings. Josiah will have two sons, then a grandson, and then his youngest son, four kings after him. But the last king of Judah was one of Josiah's own sons. So it's the next generation that is going to partake of the outpouring of this wrath and God's judgment on all of these evils. Sadly, Josiah's posterity, his sons, were wicked. Like the people who were feignedly keeping this covenant that Josiah made them swear to, that they would keep the words of God's commandments, the words of the law. They weren't sincere in that, and as soon as Josiah was gone, then they immediately gave themselves over to the pursuit of all of that wickedness again. But what do we see about Josiah? What does he say about him personally? What could Josiah do to make the people be sincere in their love for God and their seeking him and their obedience to him? What could he do to make them sincerely love God with all their heart? He did all he could to encourage it, but was there any power in him to make them love God with all their heart? I mean, what can we make somebody else love God and serve him? We can't. We can teach, we can encourage, we can be an example, and we have to be all of those things. And he was all of that, as we need to be in our time. And that makes a difference. That can make a big difference in people. That can cause help. The Lord can use that to bring someone to have that kind of love for the Lord. But we can't force it. We can't make them. Does God make someone? That we have to choose to love God, to serve him. That's one of the things God is seeking after. He's searching us. He's encouraging us to do that himself. He's not going to force us to love him with all of our heart. He commands that. We have to choose that. And on the basis of our choice, whether or not to glorify God as God, our eternity and where we spend it is going to be based on that choice. But we all have to choose that. Nobody can choose that for us. We can't choose it for somebody else. It's sad to see that even with this example they had, and could they have possibly had a better example of someone leading them righteously, sincerely seeking God to do his will with all of his heart? Could they have had a better example than they had in Josiah? There was no better example of all those kings, as he just said. They had the best example of that they could have possibly had, really, since David. And the sad part for them is that even with that example, with all of, he personally, as we have read before, he personally read every word out of God's law that had been found. He read it himself before all the people, had them all gather there, made sure every one of them heard every word, and then he made them enter that covenant that they would seek God and that they would keep his commandments. And then he was doing it himself, and they had the example of that. I mean, what more could Josiah have done? Well, if you can find anything, I don't know of anything else he could have done from what the Lord describes there. And is he going to be condemned because of what the people, that they wouldn't do what he was doing with all their heart? No. So he was a preacher of righteousness like Noah had been. And how many people listened to Noah? Yeah. Which, sadly, Josiah didn't even have that. But, I mean, Noah was not condemned because the people wouldn't listen the 100 years he was working on the ark and preaching, warning them. They wouldn't listen. And Josiah did all he could. But he was spared because of that. But he tells us there was no king before him that turned to the Lord with all of his heart, with all of his soul, with all of his might, according to all the law of Moses. Neither after him arose there any like him. That's the conclusion that 2 Kings chapter 23 gives. This, we plan to come back to this. We still have to look at the events surrounding that were involved with Josiah's death. And we do want to spend a few minutes with a comparison with what he says about Josiah there with what God said about Hezekiah. Because there were some similar words that he said about Hezekiah that made Hezekiah unique to all the kings in Judah before and after him. So we want to note the similarities, but there's obviously some difference between what God says about each of those men. Because if it's exactly the same thing, if Hezekiah was exactly the same, had the same quality that Josiah had, and there was none before or after him, well, did Josiah come after Hezekiah? Yeah, so whatever Hezekiah was, the Lord said there was none before him or after him in this particular realm. Just like it says about Josiah here, there was none before him. Well, Hezekiah was before Josiah. So Hezekiah was before Josiah. Josiah was after Hezekiah. So obviously the Lord can't say that both of them were exactly, had the same quality and none before after them had it. Because that would cancel each other out, wouldn't it? There's no contradiction there. He is pointing out there's some similarities, but there's also some differences or a couple of differences that we need to look at. So that's something for you to be thinking about and maybe look into some more, because we do want to consider that before we move on from what our study about Josiah and what happened about him and what happened in his days. But what we want to do now is go back to 2 Chronicles to chapter 35, because there in that chapter we have a lot more detail about what we saw in three verses here in 2 Kings chapter 23, namely verses 21 through 23. Those three verses here told us about the keeping of the Passover in Josiah's 18th year. We got more detail about it in 2 Chronicles 35, as we said. It's also worthy of comparison to what we had already studied in 2 Chronicles 30 about the Passover that was kept in Hezekiah's days. Now, when Hezekiah kept the Passover that he did in his time in 2 Chronicles chapter 30, and there we have a lot of detail about that. That was something that had not been done, and there hadn't been anything done like it going back to when. And what did it tell us in 2 Chronicles chapter 30, verse 26? So there was great joy in Jerusalem, for since the time of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, there was not the like in Jerusalem. So there was that Passover that Hezekiah held, and that was at the beginning of his reign. Was that the only Passover that was observed during all of Hezekiah's days? He doesn't mention the other ones. Why would Hezekiah be so mindful to make sure that God's commandment was obeyed there at the very beginning of his reign when he had the authority to do this, and then would he neglect it the rest of the years of his reign? Of course not, because then the Lord wouldn't have been making the statement that he did about how Hezekiah walked in the ways of David his father. He couldn't have said that if he left off the keeping of that commandment of God the rest of his time. So he obviously, the Passover was observed yearly like it was supposed to through the reign of Hezekiah. The focus that we see in 2 Chronicles 30 is that first one, because it had been forsaken and neglected for quite some time. But not only that, even when it had been kept, and without doubt, during the time of Asa and Jehoshaphat, those righteous men of God, as the Lord had said, they walked in the ways of David, their father, they would have been keeping this commandment too. But what is being done as far as the entire, all the kingdom, he says there about what Hezekiah did, that was, there hadn't been like that since Solomon's time, going all the way back to the son of David himself in Solomon's days. Now, what did we just read there in 2 Chronicles, or 2 Kings chapter 23, this Passover that Josiah held in the 18th year of his reign, that it was had not been held like that since the days of, well, here it says in verse 22, since the days of the judges that judged Israel, nor in all the days of the kings of Israel, nor of the kings of Judah. Well, I mean, that's just stating it, emphasizing it further, because if it goes back to the time of the judges, that precedes the time of all the kings. Now he's going to be more specific than that in 2 Chronicles 35. He's going to say a particular judge in his time that this was that this Passover hadn't been kept like, and that's in 2 Chronicles 35 verse 18, where he says, "And there was no Passover like to that kept in Israel from the days of Samuel the prophet. Neither did all the kings of Israel keep such a Passover as Josiah kept, and the priests and the Levites and all Judah and Israel that were present, and the inhabitants of Jerusalem." And there is showing how it was different. It was not just Josiah himself, but how it involved all of the people. That, as far as that part was concerned, this was unique to, well, it hadn't been done like that going back to Samuel. Well, that's the time of the judges. I mean, who was the last judge of Israel? Samuel. And so, of course, he was the one that anointed Saul to be the first king of Israel. But even in David's time, the Passover wasn't kept like this. So Hezekiah, I mean, it was kept like what Hezekiah's was, because Hezekiah's was the first since Solomon's time. But now what Josiah did goes back even further, all the way back to the days of Samuel the prophet and judge. So there hadn't been anything like this in Israel for hundreds of years. I mean, this is going to go back 500 years plus. I mean, that's a long time for the history of Israel as a nation. I mean, that is a long time. I mean, that's over half the time that they've existed as a nation. So, I mean, the from Moses to Samuel, I mean, that covers 450 years. This is a longer period of time from Samuel to this for this Passover to be held like that. So. This was a monumental event for sure, and the Lord speaks of it in that way. So it's certainly worth our time to read the details of it that we have here in 2 Chronicles chapter 35. So as we start in verse 1, it says, "Moreover, Josiah kept a Passover unto the Lord in Jerusalem. And they killed the Passover on the 14th day of the first month." Now we know from what we read in 2 Kings chapter 23, this was in his 18th year that this was done. So they killed the Passover on the 14th day of the first month. Now that's different than the first Passover that Hezekiah held. What do we remember about that Passover? When was it held? The following month, 1 month later, because the timing of when Hezekiah had reached the throne to be able to gather the people together to do this, it was past the time for the 14th day of the first month. And so, as we know from the book of Numbers, the Lord had provided in Numbers chapter 9, and we've read those 1 through 14 there before. In fact, we even looked at that last Sunday morning in our study about the Passover, which is a shadow that the Lord has given for the Lord's Supper. And Lord willing, next about an hour from now, as the Lord wills, we'll be studying about that fulfillment of that shadow with the keeping of the Lord's Supper. But when we were studying last week about that, we read Numbers 9, 1 through 14 again, or parts of that. But that's where the Lord gave the one exception to the time in which the Passover was to be kept. The Lord had ordained that to be kept on the 14th day of the first month, going back to when it was originally done. in Egypt, and to be kept every year at that same time. The Lord did give that exception in Numbers 9. It could be postponed 1 month for the reasons that he gave there, which in Hezekiah's time, it met that criteria, so the Passover was held a month late then. Well, this one that's held by Josiah, it's held here in the first month on the 14th day of the month, the exact time that the Lord had ordained for it to be done. And so the Passover is being kept in the right time that the Lord had given. This is in Josiah's 18th year. Well, when in his reign was the law discovered? So when did he know about the Passover and the details of observing it, when and how and all of those things? Well, he learned that, obviously, from when he heard the words of that law of the Lord, when it had been discovered by Hilkiah, which we know from the previous chapter, 2 Chronicles 34, in verse 8, when he commissioned the repair of the house of the Lord and the book was found, it tells us in verse 8 of chapter 34 what year of his reign that occurred in. 18th year. Now, what month is it, or what year of his reign was this Passover kept that we read in 2 Kings chapter 23 and verse 21? The 18th year in his reign. Should that come as a surprise? I mean, when he heard that, was he going to wait a year before getting around to observing the Passover? Or as soon as he knew about it and learned about what should be done, did he not immediately do it at the first opportunity? There's no delay at all. Just like Hezekiah immediately set things in order according to God's commandments as soon as he had the authority to do so. And as far as the Passover, with the timing of when he came to the throne, it just happened that they had to invoke that exception and it was held a month late. Well, the timing that was not thrown off here in Josiah's time. Well, as soon as he learns about it, and he hears what needs to be done, he has it done, and in keeping with the heart that Josiah had, he learns about it and he makes it be done. And when it's done unlike it's been done in over 500 years, all the way back to Samuel's time. I mean, that says a lot about Josiah, doesn't it? That says a lot about his zeal, his love for God, and his zeal for keeping his commandments. There's nothing halfway or even 90% about this, is there? I mean, this is done fully with all of his heart in every way, the way the Lord would have it done by all the people. He makes sure it's done that way. And it's done that way as soon as he knows about it to do it. In verse 2 it says, and he set the priests in their charges and encouraged them to do the service of the house of the Lord, and said unto the Levites that taught all Israel, which were holy unto the Lord, put the holy ark in the house which Solomon the son of David, king of Israel, did build. It shall not be a burden upon your shoulders. Serve now the Lord your God and his people Israel, and prepare yourselves by the houses of your fathers, after your courses, according to the writing of David, king of Israel, and according to the writing of Solomon, his son. And stand in the holy place according to the divisions of the families of the fathers of your brethren, the people, and after the division of the families of the Levites. So kill the Passover and sanctify yourselves and prepare your brethren that they may do according to the word of the Lord by the hand of Moses. Now, is there anything that we can see that we might say is a little bit backwards here, in a sense? Here you have the king instructing whom? The priest. Here the king is setting forth, okay, here's what God says, and all by all these commandments, now you go make sure you do this, 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 and this exactly like God said. Now, what was the priest's job, main job? Shouldn't they have been the ones to be telling, shouldn't they have been the ones teaching all this to everybody, make sure, and if anything, to be telling the king, okay, we're doing this, and this has to be done this way, and tell all the people that too? So this is really, it shows the shame that was on all the priests for all this time. I mean, going back to the having God's word lost at all. I mean, whose fault is all that? And yes, we can look at the wickedness of Manasseh for all those years. But as wicked as he was, did that force all the priests to be wicked and to have no care for God and no care for his word, to where they're not even reading it, not reading it to the people? They don't even know what it says anymore, and they don't even know where it is in the temple. Whose fault is that? Did the priests bear any responsibility for this? Well, like we've read in Hosea 4, verse 6, when he said, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. And in that very verse, who does he chiefly hold responsible for the ignorance of the people? How about the ones that God had charged to make sure that the people knew what God said? That's the priests. Well, here they are being, they're fully ignorant. Now, from everything that we can see, was Hilkiah and the priests, were they complying with what God said? I mean, when they found the law, they brought it before the king and had it read to him. So this is not, and we don't know the details of each and every one of those priests, how many of them may have been feignedly keeping these commandments. But, I mean, it appears that there was some sincerity there with Hilkiah and at least some of these others, but it's not to criticize them. They're doing what they should do now, but this speaks to the problem, the general problem as a whole, that has been with the priesthood for some time. That they're the ones who are supposed to be instructing everybody else what God says, and they're having to be told that. And so that's what Josiah is doing, but he's not leaving it to somebody else to make sure things are done right, is he? He's heard what God says. That's why he read it himself to all the people, and now he's making sure that the priests carry out this commandment for the nation. I mean, he's in the position of authority as king, and he's making sure everything's being done God's way by everybody. He's doing all that he can and doing it with all of his heart. In fact, what we read next in verse 7, it says, and Josiah gave to the people of the flock lambs and kids, all for the Passover offerings, for all that were present, to the number of 30,000 and 3,000 bullocks. These were of the king's substance. And we had already read Hezekiah did the same thing when they held it another week. They wanted to observe the Feast of Unleavened Bread. They wanted to keep that an additional week, and the king made provision for them to do that. And here Josiah, he's commanding everybody to keep this, but he's doing everything that he can personally to help to make sure that it's carried out properly. Even that's quite an abundance of substance that he's giving to this occasion to make sure it's done right. I mean, he's not just saying the words, now you go and do all of this. He's making sure that they have everything they need to be able to carry it out. Not just the instructions, but to have the goods, the necessary animals for keeping these commandments. Verse 8 says, and his princes gave willingly unto the people, to the priests and to the Levites. Hilkiah and Zechariah and Jehiel, rulers of the house of God, gave unto the priests for the Passover offerings 2,600 small cattle and 300 oxen. So, I mean, he says that they were doing this willingly. So we can see there was sincerity on the part of these leaders of the priests. Verse 9 says, Conaniah also, and Shemaiah and Nethaneel, his brethren, and Hashabiah and Jael and Jozabad, chief of the Levites, gave unto the Levites for Passover offerings 5,000 small cattle and 500 oxen. So the service was prepared, and the priests stood in their place, and the Levites in their courses, according to the king's commandment. And they killed the Passover, and the priests sprinkled the blood from their hands, and the Levites flayed them. And they removed the burnt offerings that they might give according to the divisions of the families of the people to offer unto the Lord, as it is written in the book of Moses. And so did they with the oxen. And they roasted the Passover with fire according to the ordinance. But the other holy offerings sod they in pots and in cauldrons and in pans, and divided them speedily among all the people. Now, as far as the Passover itself, what was the commandment about that? How was the Passover to be cooked? Roasted with fire, not sodden. And so they made sure that was done in accordance with what God commanded. The rest of these sacrifices, they did it as it is written there. So there was no prohibition against sodden in pots and cauldrons and pans. Verse 14 says, and afterward they made ready for themselves and for the priests, because the priests, the sons of Aaron, were busied in offering of burnt offerings and the fat until night. Therefore the Levites prepared for themselves and for the priests, the sons of Aaron, and the singers, the sons of Asaph, were in their place according to the commandment of David, and Asaph, and Heman, and Jeduthun, the king's seer. And the porters waited at every gate, that they might not depart from their service, for their brethren, the Levites, prepared for them. So all the service of the Lord was prepared the same day to keep the Passover and to offer burnt offerings upon the altar of the Lord according to the commandment of King Josiah. And the children of Israel that were present kept the Passover at that time and the Feast of Unleavened Bread 7 days. And there was no Passover like to that kept in Israel from the days of Samuel the prophet, neither did all the kings of Israel keep such a Passover as Josiah kept. And the priests and the Levites and all Judah and Israel that were present, and the inhabitants of Jerusalem, in the 18th year of the reign of Josiah was this Passover kept. All right, so that covers the keeping of this Passover in this 18th year of Josiah's reign, the very year that he heard the words of the law of the Lord that were found and knew what was to be done in regard to the keeping of the observance of the Passover. And it's done in a way that has not been done for many centuries in Israel. Lord willing, next time we'll pick up from there. We have a little bit more to read here in 2 Chronicles chapter 35 that will cover to the end of Josiah's life and reign, as well as in 2 Kings chapter 23. So we're near the end of that, and we'll see how close we can come to wrapping that up next time, next Lord's Day. We are very quickly nearing the end. We've only got one more chapter in 2 Chronicles after this. Chapter 36 is the last of the chapters of that book, and then we've only got two more chapters in 2 Kings. So when we finish these chapters about Josiah, there's only three total chapters left, and all that we have to study in 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings, and 1 and 2 Chronicles. So we're almost there. So Lord willing, we'll continue with that next Lord's Day, but we'll go now to our Heavenly Father in prayer again.